So I guess, well, welcome to another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. My name is Christian Horn. I'm on the line with Corey Blake and Nalene Blake. And we are here to talk about, how do I put it? I don't want to put it like this is like a very special episode of Part-Time Fanboy or anything. But I felt like there was a need to sort of do something on our end, you know, because Nalene has been struggling with health issues for years and years and years. And it seems that we've kind of hit sort of a critical point. Am I right?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. Yeah.
And so, Nalene, do you want to talk a little bit about, well, let's go back a little bit. Like, maybe we could just talk about you guys a little bit, if that's okay. Like,
sure.
Like, how did you guys meet each other? Like, how long have you been together? I think you posted on Facebook, you just had your 17-year anniversary.
Yeah, that's right. We met in college.
Yeah.
And started dating then, and then we moved out to Los Angeles together, and about 15 years ago or something like that, she was exercising actually rather aggressively.
And dieting
and doing all this really great
second
work.
Job.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I was
a production assistant on a shoot. I was crazy.
Like full time? Two jobs?
I worked full time. And then I had a second job at retail. And then that took a lot of physical work. And then I was working as a production assistant, of course, for free. To try to get experience because I was looking to become a producer.
Gotcha. And so when did you guys get married? Because I was at that wedding. I remember it.
That was a few years later. What was it?
2006.
Yeah.
Corey forgot. Corey, how could you forget the wedding date?
It's easy to forget that number for some reason.
Yeah. 2006. Wow. Oh, wow. So it's been that long. Oh, wow. And so 17 years completely together, and you met in college, and you drove out here both to California together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Her little neon.
Little red neon, all stuffed with a bunch of stuff that was all our belongings that we could bring with us.
So what made you come out to California? I mean, like, what was it? Was it, it was the industry basically?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I was working as a production assistant at a small station in New Hampshire. It's like the main station in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
There's not a lot else there. Massachusetts at the time didn't have a lot either. And I could have done more news, but that wasn't my interest.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. And of course, I wanted to come out to do acting. And I figured it was either Los Angeles or New York City.
Yeah.
You know, I figured we'll do the one further away first, and then if that doesn't work out, we'll go to New York.
Gotcha.
Here we are, exactly.
Yeah, in LA. Wow. And
so we stayed.
Yeah, still. Well, thankfully, because that's how we kind of got to know each other. I mean, Corey, you were in an acting group with my wife.
Right.
And then, that's how we all kind of got to know one another.
Yeah.
And Corey and I turned out to have interests in comic books and just all around nerd stuff. And then that's how we kind of got closer. I think most recently through like the Dig Comics documentary that you worked on, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Isn't that
all right.
Sorry for that.
No, it's all right. It happens.
We have the windows open to keep me a little cool at the moment.
So no, that's fine. As long as they're not heading to your house.
No, they're not. That's thank okay. God.
No. Yeah. So you were saying, Corey, I mean, I was saying that I think that we kind of, you and I kind of got a little closer after you had, we were at my friend Jesse's wedding and you had said like, oh, I worked on this documentary. And I was like, oh, really? And I was like, and then you were like, oh, I hear you write for Ain't It Cool. Cause I was writing for Ain't It Cool at the time. And you were like, hey, do you want to look at the documentary? And I was like, oh man, what if it's horrible? but then I was like, on the outside, I was like, yeah, I'll totally take a look at it. And it ended up being like really great.
Yeah, that was worked with Miguel Sima on that, who has been on the Part-Time Fanboy at least once or twice, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was a great, you know, great documentary. We won some awards on that and got some good notice and that's how we kind of started talking, and then I think some point after that you started this podcast up and asked me if I wanted to be on it.
Yeah. And so Nalin, Corey's pursuing acting and you were pursuing production?
Yeah, production in any way that I could get my foot in the door. That's what I had heard. So first, I became a page at CBS, and that's like an 18-month program, but I was like, I'll just be here as long as I can, you know, as long as I have to until I can get a better job that has benefits. And no signs of any health, really big health issues, but I knew I should have benefits.
Sure.
Thank goodness something told me that.
Yeah.
And heavily looked, and at the time the job market was really good. And there were so many jobs, but I applied and finally ended up working at the local Fox affiliate, actually Fox 11, and in the engineering office, and was handling not only the administrative duties for the office, but also scheduling for over 100 people that worked the news in the station. It wasn't production yet, but it was a great way to get myself in there.
Yeah, I mean, as anyone knows,
great, you know, big company, you know, all that stuff. So
yeah, as anyone knows, it's like in any industry, it's like you got to work your way up, or you got to finagle your way in. Correct.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I had like 30 interviews. That was even when the job market was good. And
oh,
I was just,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So production into TV or film or just anything?
It was TV. Sometimes it's still TV when I think about it. It was TV at the time. I mean, I have a degree in communications media with a specialization in television production. So yeah, okay, TV, but I would love to do film still. Sure. Yeah, so pretty much, and what I noticed, I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do exactly. And then as I worked on a couple of other films on the side, I noticed that, wow, I'm a producer. And I ended up being at Fox 11, and then we took on KCOP My 13, I don't know what it's called now exactly, but another station. So it was like a duopoly. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
No, it's all right.
But what happened was I worked in engineering for 5 years, and then I had gotten to know a lot of people since I was scheduling people, and I like to know people.
Yeah.
But not like to know people, but
No, I know.
I like people. So yeah. I knew a bunch of people, and I knew that there was an opening. Someone told me there was an opening in the promotions department or creative services. And I was like, wow, that's much more up my alley.
Yeah.
And I interviewed for it and was hired pretty quickly after that into that position. So it was a little bit of a step up. I became the promotion coordinator. And for 5 years, I was there scheduling the promos that are on the air, that they aren't like the commercials like for Taco Bell, but they're, hey, this is coming up on House.
Gotcha.
Like, oh God, I'm dating myself, but you know, or on whatever is on now on Fox. And for the station too. And then I also ended up becoming, without the title, production manager. And gotcha. I realized, wow, I'm a production manager, producer. Like this is what I want.
Yeah.
But that was a lot of work and a lot of stress and a lot of high maintenance.
Gotcha. Yeah. As often is the case in production and television.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I guess I'm probably going to ask a lot of stupid questions because I'm not familiar with like everything about like what's developed like over the past several years. So at what point? Because I mean, the reason that we're doing this podcast is because you've had health issues for several years, and basically, like, what's happening now? Like, what's happening right now? It seems like what I've seen on Facebook is that your insurance company is kind of like messing around with you guys. Is that?
Yeah, and a couple months ago, Nalene got an infection, and so
a sinus infection, bronchitis.
Okay.
And we're sort of jumping around, you know, obviously jumping around.
Yeah.
But with MS and lupus, the medication she's on, it sort of stifles the immune system.
Okay.
And so she's really susceptible to infections like this. And so, she's had an infection, and it took a really long time to get to shake that. And in the process of that, she, had a flare up with her MS and lupus. And so, that has been, basically that's what's been going on. And her neurologist, who is this MS specialist, he prescribed to her, a treatment to sort of calm that down. And
specific treatment to calm it down.
Yeah, to address that flare up. And they, and so the health insurance said no.
Really?
Yeah. They declined it because, we didn't see their reason, but the most likely is because the standard treatment, for this is like steroids. But last time she had a big exacerbation, which was in January and February, she responded very badly to the steroids.
Okay.
Made me more ill.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So wait, let me stop, cause we're sort of jumping ahead in time. But I guess my point is that the whole reason that we're having this discussion is because there's problems with your health. The insurance company are not doing their sort of like due diligence or not coming to your aid as they should be. And that's why I wanted to have you on the podcast, because I felt like this was very important to get out there, as limited as an audience as I have anyway. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's kind of why I wanted to go back. So let me just go back to Nalene. You were diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2003.
December 2002.
2002. Okay. I was looking at the crowdfunding thing. I think it said 2003, but whatever, maybe I read it wrong.
It's okay.
In any case, how did that like develop? Were you feeling tired? Like what sort of symptom, like how did you discover your diagnosis?
Well, I'm going to say this because I think there's a great way to point out like the background. I was 25. So I was invincible. I was in what I thought was the prime of my life. I was going to make it all happen.
Yeah.
And that's why I was doing all the stuff I was doing, like trying to get healthy and working out and having too many jobs.
Sure.
And so in the midst of that, I don't know if I was tired. I don't know if I had any aches and pains. When I look back, I was saying I was old. I was 25. But okay. And what happened was the strangest symptom. And boy, did I really confuse most of my doctors. I had an HMO at the time, which was also extremely difficult to deal with, actually worse than a PPO. I started having this strange tingling on the bottom of my feet, nowhere else, just the bottom.
Okay.
So I started bringing it up to my general practitioner or whatever, and we started numerous tests, and to me the tingling wasn't going anywhere. But I had been told by the doctor that, you know, he kept asking me, is it traveling? And I said, no. And I said, why? And he was like, because if it travels, then that's a bad thing. So I'm glad that my nature is to question what that means, because, and I think that's a big thing to just put out there. Please question your doctors.
Yeah, absolutely.
They won't tell you probably until you ask or unless you ask.
Yeah.
So he said, well, we won't go there yet, but it is serious. And I was like, okay. So.
Well, what does that mean? Like, we won't go there yet, but it is. That's kind of conflicting.
Serious.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, but the idea is serious. And I was just like,
that must have terrified you.
Okay, thanks. Oh, I was terrified the whole time. The entire time I was trying to find out what was wrong, I found out other things that were maybe wrong with me, or other things I could treat, or maybe I had skin cancer, or just all these weird random things were coming up because I was seeing all these specialists.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at the time it was difficult because I had an HMO and I had to get referrals, and those took forever, and it all had to be within one medical group, and it was a nightmare then too. So So basically, one day during, I don't know, it was like in October of 2002. So my symptoms kind of started in April that I remember, the tingling on the bottom of my feet. I mean, we tried circulation. We tried some nerve medication. We tried different sneakers. We tried anything you could come up with, and nothing really stopped it. You can't ignore tingling. I've really decided that's the best symptom to get.
So it was constant, like consistent?
Yeah, at the time it was, which is actually kind of unusual.
And is that, I thought I heard somewhere that like tingling on the, like on your feet might have been associated with diabetes, or am I wrong about that? Was that, well, did anyone?
I think people thought it might be diabetes, and they checked my blood and it didn't show anything.
Sure.
So yeah, that's the thing. I could have all these horrible things. So the whole journey, I'm like, like already my wall of, or my invincible idea was starting to, you know, get really clouded over.
Yeah. I went through a little bit of that with my thyroid. Yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah. It's very strange. Like you just start to be like, wow, I'm not immortal. Yeah. It's very hard actually.
Yeah.
So October, the tingling started traveling up my leg, all the way up my side, my left side, into my left arm, through my hand. I swear it knew to jump to the other hand.
Holy
it jumped
cow.
To my right hand, went over to my right arm, and started going down to the right leg. I actually will be honest and was in denial and wouldn't admit it to anybody, not to Corey or anybody or myself, for about 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't a terrible tingling like the bottom of my feet, but it was noticeable. And I kept being like, no, that's not happening. Nope, it's not. Well, you know, you can't ignore things like this. So, at some point I had this rheumatologist, because then they kept trying to check if I had lupus. And she, I consider her like one of my angels.
Yeah.
Because she helped me get tests I couldn't get anywhere else. I had a neurologist and he was not helpful at all.
Yeah.
I had all the horrible tests done. I had a nerve conduction test, which by the way was still the worst test I've ever had. And I've had a lot of weird ones.
Mm-hmm.
I asked, you know, nothing showed up. And I'm 25, and that's like the main age to be diagnosed with MS.
Oh, really?
And I asked the neurologist afterwards, well, so what does this mean? He said, nothing, you're fine. I'm so fine. So, I'm sure I was extremely fatigued at that point, but no, I'm working, I'm still doing stuff.
So you were able to kind of physically still like function, like still like you like you didn't attribute it to stress or anything like that, like you were...
No, I had no idea.
Okay.
I think I was just completely in denial.
Gotcha.
I think I was just too busy going straight, you know, like type A personality times 100 and
gotcha.
Go full speed ahead, tough it out.
Yeah.
So at some point things started getting weird. I don't know what exactly it was. It's all kind of a blur at times. But the rheumatologist who stuck by me this whole time, even though she couldn't exactly diagnose me with anything, because this was 12 years ago. I mean, a lot has become, you know, I think they've come a long way in 12 years in some ways.
Uh-huh.
And she said, I can't really diagnose you with lupus, but you have, with lupus, there's like, it's more of a clinical diagnosis. Like you have to have a lot of things show, it may not show up in your blood. It may not show up here, you know, like you have to have like, there's like a checklist, I guess, or something. And I had like 5 or 8 or something of the 11 that was necessary. And you had to have a 9 or something.
Okay.
And she said, I'm sorry, I can't diagnose you with lupus, but just keep it in your mind that you might have lupus one day, but I just can't really diagnose you with it yet. I don't want to put you in through that. So just keep it in your mind. And I said, okay. But she's like, we need to get you an MRI. So she ordered an MRI. Now, it's been 6 months now, and no one had ordered me an MRI.
Really?
And almost everyone I've talked to who has, when they talk about their diagnosis with MS, it's very difficult to be diagnosed with MS because a lot of the symptoms are pain, fatigue, stiffness, weakness, tingling. I mean, a lot of that stuff can happen with any disease or any disorder or any problem.
Sure.
So it gets overlooked quite a bit. I think it also gets overlooked because it's very expensive, but we'll get to that. So, so I had an MRI. I was mortified. It's a really long story. They put me in a hospital because, I could get really, really into it, but they put me in a hospital because they thought I had a brain tumor because one of the lesions on my brain, MS kind of scars you, it scars your brain, hence multiple sclerosis. It's like multiple scars.
Okay.
And it can affect the whole body, and you can get the rest of your body pretty scarred too, because the nerve impulses aren't being taken care of. The cells are killing each other. It's an autoimmune disease. It's the body is attacking itself. It's very confused. So I was in the hospital for 3 days. I don't know why, except to add to my stress, I think, because I didn't understand what was happening. And throughout all that stress, they kept watching me. I think I felt like an animal in a cage or something. I could have left, but I didn't want to. And within a week of, it was right around Thanksgiving. So then Thanksgiving happened. There was a family reunion. So that added to a lot of the activity and the how tired I was. And I didn't know what was going on because the neurologist I spoke with wasn't helpful at all. Not clear, nothing.
Yeah.
Fast forward a little tiny, tiny bit. And the first week of December, I can tell you even the date. On December 6th, I saw my rheumatologist. And, December 2nd, my whole body flipped out. I can't explain it. I started feeling fire under my skin. I started anything you can imagine, like tingling, pain, stiffness, weakness, not being able to move my hands suddenly.
Wow.
Well, that was terrifying. All of that happened because I wasn't told anything and I had started looking online.
Yeah.
And I had just barely read about attacks or flares or exacerbations. And I thank God I did that because I think I woke up the next morning. I thought, I can make this go away, because that was the thing. I kept thinking I could make it go away.
Yeah.
And told Corey about it, and we ended up going to the ER, and even the ER doctor was like, you have MS, you're having an attack. And I was like, okay, how can it be that my ER doctor,
yeah,
because they're not supposed to diagnose you with anything, is telling you to have MS. So they gave me too many steroids at the time. I found out I was overdosed. It's a wonder I didn't I explode, or I don't know what. I got some strange superhero complexes from that overdose. I think it did help. That one did help. But that was a long time ago. And that was December 2nd, I think I was at the ER. December 6th, I was diagnosed with MS by my rheumatologist. And rheumatologists are not supposed to, I guess ethically, go into the whole MS or neurologist region of healthcare or something. But she couldn't believe I wasn't diagnosed yet. She couldn't believe I didn't know anything yet. And she got the records sent over to her, and she told me that she was hoping I was sitting down. She closed the door really quietly, and she said, I'm sorry I have to tell you, but you have MS. And that was a whole shock of a half and a half. And but I don't know exactly what I was thinking or feeling. I think it was just too much shock. And then, because all I pictured was someone in a wheelchair and everything else, all the horrible things you can imagine.
Sure.
Then she gave me a cup of tea.
Huh.
And closed the door and left me alone for a while. I've been through a lot of doctors, and that was the most thoughtful thing I have ever encountered with any doctor. Yeah, so then I kept working.
Oh, really?
Yes. For another 8 years.
So, well, I mean, you were able to keep working, you were able to keep functioning.
Barely.
And like, Barely. Oh, barely? Okay.
Yeah, when I think about it now, I don't know how I worked. Like, my standards are very different now because I'm a different person.
Sure.
Like, every time something happens or comes up, I change again. No, I just forced myself through it. I don't think I should have been working.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what did your... I mean, I guess I'm just trying to imagine how that sort of diagnosis goes. What do they tell you? Do they tell you, like, what's going to happen? Like, do they tell you not to work? Do they tell you, like, what, you know? I mean, I guess... You know, because you kept working. So, like, to me, in my imagination, I'm thinking I'm diagnosed with something like that. Does it come on suddenly? Like, are you in constant pain all the time? Like, I guess, how do you function, or how does your system work, I guess, is the question.
Well, that's a hard one, because when I was first diagnosed with MS, I'm almost definite I had lupus at the time too. Okay. I also know that when I was diagnosed with MS, probably had MS for a long time too, but you know, that's why we talk about diagnosis and not like, so when did you get it? Like,
sure,
that way. And I think I've had lupus since I was a kid or something like it. I just didn't know that there was a difference. Like, I thought that was my norm. Yeah, I think so. I have flashbacks, you know. So, no, I wasn't told much of anything. And I think mostly that's about the MS, because I think it's mostly because I didn't have very good doctors at the time. But I was just kind of told, like, I wasn't told much of anything. I was told I had 4 choices for medications and that it was a really good idea. Now, this was 12 years ago. It's very different now. But it was a really good idea to go on one as soon as possible, and that they're all injections. Now, I nearly had a heart attack when I found out I had to inject myself. So that was like, ugh! And then I started, to be honest, to think about, oh my God, the stress of the insurance. And I hadn't even dealt that much with insurance at the time. You know, I kept working because... that's what you do, right? I mean,
yeah.
You're supposed to keep working. If you're not working, you must, I have no idea what's wrong with you. That's just, honestly, I had a lot of fear about, if I didn't work, where would the money come from? How would we live?
Of course.
And I had to prove it. I had to prove myself that, and to everyone else, that no, I can do this. But boy, I suffered a lot, and I had a lot of sick days, and due to some really great people I worked with, I was able, I think that's it, I was able to keep working. And I discovered acupuncture, and acupuncture changed my life. I found someone who was compassionate and a healer. I really believe that there are some acupuncturists who maybe don't have that ability or that whatever connection with me.
Yeah.
She helped me keep going at work for at least 4 years, because I saw her at least once a week, and she addressed the main issues. Not exactly sure if I'm answering your question, but no, they're not very clear about much of anything, to be honest.
And did you have to go out and just do research yourself? Like, that sort of thing?
Quite often, yes.
Really?
Yeah. And... then what was happening was I would have these follow-up appointments and follow-up MRIs, because the MRIs show you where the lesions are, and I would talk about my symptoms, and I would say, these medications that you do the injection with, luckily there are now maybe like 12 treatments, I could be wrong, but I think it's a lot more than 4, and there are now oral medications to take, thank goodness. Because one of the things that was also so difficult was these medications would also make me incredibly ill. The one I was on would give me flu-like symptoms. So I did it every other day, the injection, which was one of the hardest things I have ever had to do. I don't know that I ever got over having to do it with my on myself. And thankfully, Corey would help. But still, like, I don't think he would ever be able to get over it either. And it was always a big event because it had to happen at night. And the reason they had you do it at night was that you could get sick. And so they would have you pre-medicate with ibuprofen or Tylenol or something. So I'm having digestive issues.
Yeah.
Now. And then I would have to do the injection. And every other night, when I did it every other day, I would wake up in a horrible fever, even though I had pre-medicated. Honestly, I toughed out so much, I don't know how I did it. But it did stop the progression of the disease. They are finding out now, according to my current neurologist, you know, because I have relapsing remitting, which means it comes and goes.
Gotcha.
My problem is I don't know if it comes and goes that much because I have lupus, and I was diagnosed with lupus 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And so it's really difficult. I can start to maybe tell the difference, but they overlap so much, and I think sometimes they're like siblings.
Yeah.
They either love each other or hate each other. So, you know, I'm always compromising. I'm always having a symptom. I'm always feeling something. It's just really come to a head lately. Because one of the things Corey had mentioned was that I had had that those infections. And when you have infections, that can cause a flare to happen because your whole immune system is already freaking out. So I had never had that happen before, and I've gotten sick numerous times with sinus infections and stuff, and I just couldn't kick the sinus infection at all.
Gotcha.
So there I was fighting a flare and a sinus infection and bronchitis at one point.
Wow.
I don't know how I did it, to be honest.
So when you say, so for people, for somebody like me, who may not know what multiple sclerosis is or lupus is. I mean, Amy, my wife, actually has a relative that is kind of is in the same boat as you are, has MS and lupus as well.
Really?
Yeah. And
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I know.
It's
awful. But I should probably know more about it. But what is multiple sclerosis? What is lupus?
Corey, can you explain a little bit? I'm getting really tired.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'll just speak up now. That's one of the symptoms is I have cognitive problems too, and I can get really fatigued really fast. So,
well, absolutely. And if you need to, if you need to get off, then that's fine too. I do not want to keep you any longer than, you know.
Thank you for listening.
No, I'm just.
You know, and some of this too, I'm a little bit in the same boat as you, is you know, there's still, I'm learning
a lot.
I am
too, too.
Yeah.
That's the thing, that with these diseases, it's really hard, like, there's still not a lot known about them.
Yeah, they're still trying to figure out. They don't know what causes it. There's no cure. But both of them are autoimmune diseases. Multiple sclerosis affects the nervous system, and it's, like she said, there's lesions in the brain that disrupt the signals that go to the, you know, the nerve endings essentially. And there's also, somehow the lesions cause a breakdown in this protective layer around the nerves that help the transmitting of signals.
Gotcha.
So that breaking down is what causes all these weird symptoms of like fatigue and weakness and tingling and, you know, just like random things, you know, her pain, her vision can be affected, her, you know, it can even manifest cognitively, memory, how she speeches, you know, just weird random stuff, balance. So that's MS, you know, very briefly.
Yeah.
And just to kind of add a little bit, because I'm always, when I'm up for it mentally, trying to read about it, but a lot of times I try to escape from it too, because if I don't, I'll lose my mind.
Sure.
But what also happens too is that anything that was scarred or affected by the lesions or whatever's happening in the nervous system where they're killing the wrong, like the good cells when they should be killing the bad ones, those will keep popping up. Like, that's kind of all the symptoms that I feel, because I've had MRIs done, and they're, you know, they're looking to see if I have new lesions and if they're active. And I haven't had active lesions in a long time, okay. But I can still have all of these symptoms.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It doesn't really go away for me anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, the medication she's on has actually been pretty effective because, yeah, like, oh, she says, amazing. Like, her lesions have actually shrunk a little bit, which is kind of pretty rare.
Uh-huh.
And so yeah, I mean, it's kind of, she's actually doing well, but mm-hmm. it certainly doesn't feel like it here.
Got you.
Because there are these attacks that happen, and if you don't treat them as soon as possible, then they get worse, which is exactly what we really are talking about today.
Yeah, I mean, right, and this is why it's sort of so desperate that for us, the insurance company has not given her this medication, and they keep saying, you know, oh, well, there's a 30-day appeal process, and it's, you know, we can't wait 30 days, you know.
Because 3 or 4 weeks ago, when I saw the neurologist, I was in a minor flare. When I saw the rheumatologist, she wasn't even sure it was lupus, but I was. And I was in a minor flare. And the neurologist said, why don't I try to get you this medication and give you a little boost? And I didn't want to do it. And he's like, well, just, you know, let's just restart, you know, because the summer's really bad too. The heat can horribly affect my MS. Like, that's one of the worst. And I just found out it can horribly affect lupus. And the sun can affect lupus really badly. And I have that. So the summer is the worst for me. And so I had just had a really, really hard summer. And then these infections jumped right in. And then the flare started up. And so we were just going to, you know, nip it in the bud.
Yeah.
Except here we are now, and I keep getting worse.
Okay, so let's just go back. Let's jump ahead to that, because I don't want to keep you too long, you know. You know, at some point you did have to stop working, but now you're dealing with the situation. Let's start from the beginning of that. What happened there, and what is the thing that's basically that you're dealing with your insurance company? Because that's what I want people to understand, so that they'll donate to your cause and, like, give you money.
Thank you. So we've set up a CrowdRise, and that was actually set up before this happened. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, we had been talking about doing this because we just financially, just normally, the copays that we have to pay for are draining us.
And I'm on disability, and it doesn't pay that much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she has a fraction of what she used to make, and I'm, you know, trying to get extra jobs to pay to kind of make up for that, but it's just not enough. And so, so we were already struggling, and then what happened is, yeah, she got this infection, and so her doctor prescribed her this treatment. It's called Acthar Gel, and
another injection. Yay.
Yeah, it's another injection.
Is that another injection on top of what you're already taking, or something?
Yeah, well, she has an oral medication now, but yeah, it would be in addition to whatever she's taking.
Yep.
Gotcha. Okay.
He prescribed that in mid-October, and
I want to point out, too, with the Acthar Gel, I did really well on it in January, February, like, extremely well. I hit a different baseline where I was like, wow, maybe there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the fact that it's like we have this data that we know it works, and that we know that what the insurance companies typically expect it to be treated for her to be treated with does not work. So, you know, it'd be one thing if he was just like, well, let's just try this weird thing, let's see what happens. We've already seen that it works, and that there's, you know, it's a history. We have data that it shows that it works for her specifically, and it's also that there's history that it works for MS in general. It's just not, you know, it's not typically what is used, because, you know, various reasons about how the drug was developed and marketed. It's just not the default that's usually used. But anyway, so yeah, so he prescribed her this medication for a second time having worked in January and February, and then it was declined by the insurance company.
Uh-huh.
The doctor appealed it. They said that it will take up to 30 days. He said, we need to expedite it. Yeah, he said, no, we need to expedite this. they said, well, it doesn't qualify. We checked and it doesn't qualify to be expedited.
Which is crazy because this can, lupus is a disease that I could have a shorter life expectancy, but I probably won't because that was about 60 years ago that they didn't know how long someone with lupus would live.
Yeah.
But it could still take my, both diseases could horribly affect either my limbs or my, or stop me from moving my body. My legs have been horribly affected by this flare. I can still walk, but it's a lot of work. I can't really stand that well in a shower. It just takes away my life, basically. This is what's happening from them.
So breaking it down sort of into the basics of what's like happening now, basically you had a medication that worked several months ago. You recently had a flare and they wanted to give you that medication and the insurance company is saying that they won't pay for it.
Right.
And
they're actually just sitting on it. I don't know if they've even what they've even said.
Well,
now.
They said initially they'd decline it, and then they were like, "Well, you know, we'll go through the appeal process, but it, you know, it takes 30 days."
And so, in the meantime, Nalin's health is deteriorating.
Right, and I've gone to the ER twice.
So you've gone to the ER twice, and the insurance company still says that you have to wait 30 days to get some sort of decision.
Well, I've been contacting them on Twitter and through various other ways, and so they're, you know, it's a huge company, and so they're like, you know, well, we're trying to expedite it, but the right person just needs to see it, which,
and
you know, to me,
so who is the insurance company?
Blue Cross of California. No, Blue Shield of California.
And what is their Twitter handle? So if that anyone's listening, we can just inundate them.
Hold on. It's at Blue Shield CA.
At Blue Shield CA. And it, and so they have no way to just jump through the 30 days no matter what your doctor says? I mean, like, whatever happened to, like,
well, there's
you
an
know,
appeal.
The decisions being made with between you and your healthcare professional?
Yeah. Exactly.
That's
yeah.
very rare, especially with lupus and with MS specifically in my experience. MS is already known as a very, very expensive disease.
Uh-huh.
So what happens with expensive diseases? Do they you got to just like act like they don't exist, or maybe I forgot I had MS? I don't know.
Yeah, one of the things that we've kind of discovered in researching a lot of this is that Acthar Gel was already really expensive because it just doesn't have a lot of high usage because it just wasn't marketed well when it was first developed and so. They recently dramatically increased their price, apparently. And so that's kind of what we think is the real reason. It's not like, oh, we don't think you need it, or you should really use this other drug. It's, we're not going to pay that.
What does Acthar Gel cost?
We think something like $30,000, like a vial. Is that
mm-hmm.
right?
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yes.
That's insanity.
Yeah.
And how long does that last you for?
I believe it's 5 doses, which is pretty much what my doctor wanted in the first place.
But how? What company makes it?
I think it's
Acthar.
Yeah, it's just Acthar, I think.
Wow.
And they're the only company that makes this medication.
Yeah, it's technically a generic, but nobody else does it because there aren't enough patients.
And you know what? The other part, too, is I never heard about this medication until the beginning of this year, because my doctor, I'm actually specifically not saying his name, but
that's fine.
I highly respect him. I've had like 10 neurologists and he's it. Which says a lot about neurologists, but he told me that I would have to try the steroids first, which they pump me full of solumedrol for, it's like 1,000 milligrams a day, or 1 gram, I'll put it, it makes sounds even worse, a day for 3 days, and with an IV, and, you know, because steroids are so good for us, and then if that doesn't work, see, we have to wait a week or two while I suffer more, if that didn't work, then we could try the Acthar Gel.
and that's what we went through in January and February. Like, we did the process of what you're supposed to do. Like, you're supposed to try the thing, you're supposed to try the steroids, they don't work, and then you try Acthar, and then you see
and
how
you
that
have
works.
To do a whole write up about why it doesn't work too. The doctor does, like, huge write up. Yeah, and the steroids are not cheap either. That's the thing too. I don't know the cost, but I know they're cheaper, but it's not. Yeah. And it's awful.
This is basically, and I'm going to make a crude analogy here. This is sort of like when I call my cable company and something's wrong with the cable and I've already reset the box like 3 times. And the first thing that they say to me is like, reset the box. And I'm like, I've already reset the box. I don't want to reset the box. So these people want you to use a medication that was detrimental to you, the steroids. And but you have something that would work. But they want you to use the steroid first anyway?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they've explicitly said that we have to go through that whole process again, but they've just declined. They just declined the doctor's prescription to cover it.
So is there anything besides this medication, this $30,000 made of gold medication and the steroid that you can take, or is that the only, like, or are there dangers of side effects with other stuff, or like what other treatments are available besides, like, my
holistic
God, the bionic medication. It sounds crazy that something's 30,000.
Holistic medication, basically, I'm guessing, or lots of meditation and hoping.
Meditation?
Yeah, can you imagine?
Like, what, they want you to pray it away or something?
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, I actually have a couple of people I know with MS who never went on the medications because, you know, if we're going to get into this a little bit, before the 90s, MS patients had no medication treatments. They had, except for steroids. That was it.
And not even like these steroids.
It was something else.
It was like really clumsy, like, you know.
So people with MS, like, I think in some ways it's like, hey, we're doing you a favor. Like,
really?
You have more than steroids now, so deal. Yeah.
Yeah, but you really don't, because if it's $30,000, like, that's unacceptable. Any normal person, you know, can't. Even a person, like, obviously you're not able to work, you're not able to function as well as you. I mean, even if it was, like, me and my wife and we were working, like, we wouldn't be able to afford that. That's insanity.
And we are, it's not like we're getting insurance for free. We're paying.
Yeah, exactly. You're paying.
Yeah. And my MS medication in general that I'm taking is an oral medication, and it was the first one on the market 3 or 4 years ago. And I was, I'm kind of proud. I was actually one of the first, I was the first person in California to take it publicly and not in the trials. Thank God I did, because it really did help. This is the one I have to take every day just for normal maintenance. That one in the beginning, I don't think it is now, but that's because there was hardly anybody on it. The pharmaceutical companies do this, was $45,000. So I believe in some ways it's like, it feels like a punishment in some ways. Like, you have MS and you're expensive, so no.
Wow.
So you have to deal. Yeah.
That's crazy.
You have to suffer. So I go to the ER and I get pumped with fluids. I get uncomfortable beds. I never know who I'm going to get for a doctor. I have to have an IV put in me. They pump me with incredibly potent pain meds, and I'm really sensitive. And they pump me with anti-nausea meds because I have digestive issues. And then they go, okay, bye. Basically, I mean, it does take some of the edge off, but it's a Band-Aid. It's all of this that they're doing is a Band-Aid, and it's all costing them extra money.
So what is going to happen if you don't get this medication, like, at this point? Because it sounds serious from what I've seen Corey saying.
Well, we don't know. I mean,
I don't want to know.
Yeah, it's unpredictable.
I don't think there's really an option.
I
gotta get it.
It's unpredictable, and so, yeah, I mean, she'd just get worse. I mean,
stop moving. I could.
Yeah, she could not walk. She could lose the ability to walk. She could lose.
Oh my God.
This is really serious. Like, I didn't really feel it in my legs until the beginning of the year. I mean, I would feel MS and pain and stiffness and stuff in the beginning of the year, but this last flare several months ago in the beginning of the year was And I walk every day. I mean, you know, Christian, I think you've seen, I have this whole thing about,
yeah,
I've walked this. That's why I do it. I mean, it's good to walk anyway, but I was told by an amazing physical therapist a couple of years ago that the most important thing for me to do with lupus and MS was to walk. Because if I don't keep my legs moving and the nerves, like letting the nerves have a memory like the muscles do, then they're not going to, you know, care about moving at one point. And thank goodness, because I asked the neurologist, you know, in the beginning of the year, after I started feeling better from the Acthar gel and recovering, I asked him, why was it such a strange flare? Like, why did it just feel so, I can't even explain it. The fatigue was just garbly. It was debilitating. Do you think I'm moving my, because my legs almost toppled out from under me while I was waiting for a medication at CVS. I can't describe it. It was so bizarre and terrifying. And I asked him, do you think that I'm mobile now because I walk every day? And he said, yes. Otherwise you would be in a lot more trouble and your body would be more affected. Wow. So, and for him to be so honest with me, that's why I like him. Like he's still my cheerleader, but he'll tell me if I, you know, like he'll tell me the truth in some way if he thinks I should hear it. So I keep walking even on these days, even if it's for a minute, even if it's for whatever it is, because some days it feels like I can walk okay, and others you would never know. I've walked almost 1,000 days in a row. So I could lose full movement in everything. I could lose my cognitive abilities. I could be, I mean, the options are not options, basically.
So just because they won't get you this medication?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what about the person who's out there saying, like, well, why don't you just do the steroids, you know? Like, if it's that bad.
That would just make her, I mean, that would just accelerate it. That would make it worse.
Yeah, because okay. Corey witnessed me, observed me when I was on the steroids in the beginning of the year. And it revved me up, but not in a good way. I just felt my heart racing and everything felt like it was going to explode. They couldn't find an IV in a good place, so they put it right, and I have carpal tunnel, they put it right in that vein where the, whatever that thing is called, that, you know, you have the carpal tunnel syndrome. So, ow, for 3 days, stuck there. And it was such a small vein, they had to give it to me very slowly, so what should have taken an hour took 2.5 hours. I had a nurse coming every day. I was supposed to lay down because it's so powerful, because it was just taking over my brain and my body. And I would get these crazy highs and like blood sugar and crazy lows. And Corey can explain what that was like.
Wow.
I had to tell him to feed me. I just didn't want to eat, but I knew I had to. And I literally would sit there in the chair and slump. Like I couldn't, it's hard to talk about, but I couldn't, at least I knew well enough to tell him to feed me. But that was hard for both of us. Thank goodness for Corey, honestly.
Well, and so the steroids are not helping at all, basically.
No. They actually added to the problem. So when I started the Acthar gel, I still had the steroids in my system. So it was a little bit rough at first because it's not like the Acthar gel is perfect. I'll get side effects from that. I'll get hungry horrors. Hunger monster will come out and yell at me in the middle of the night and tell me that if I don't eat whatever that is it wants, I'm not sleeping. And all kinds of weird things will happen. But it repaired things that I didn't know needed repairing. I saw things better. Things were almost sparkling. I could smell things like crazy. I don't like hot dogs, and hot dogs were extremely yummy. I mean,
wow.
And that was like a couple months after taking the Acthar gel. So,
holy cow.
It's not like it's a miracle, but it's what it is.
You know, we need to get you that somewhere. So where can people go to learn more about what you're doing? I know you have a website, Nalin. It's nalin.com, correct?
Yes. I haven't written on there since, I think, what is it, Corey?
Almost like a year ago, yeah.
Almost a year ago, because I've been dealing with so much health stuff.
Gotcha.
But it still explains a lot about what I've gone through in the years. And I even discuss my symptoms on there and daily instances and appointments and some other fun things. It's not all about the health stuff. And yeah. National MS Society is a great resource to learn about MS. And that's, www.nmss.org. So nationalmsssociety.org, I believe it is.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
It's the lupus one.
I think it's just lupus.org, I think.
And then what about your CrowdRise site? Where can people go to donate? I mean, I know there's a big link on parttimefanboy.com. You can't miss it. It's all the way to the left. So if you're listening to this, definitely go to our website and donate to Nalene's medical fund. Nalene and her cat, Cleo. Not a big cat fan, but that's okay. I'm a big Nalene fan.
Might make up for it.
Yeah. So they can go there. But what is the URL that they should go to directly if they don't want to go to Part-Time Fanboy?
They can go to crowdrise.com/ Nalene and Cleo's medical bills.
Gotcha. And that's Nalene, N-A-H-L-E-E-N.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's one word, no apostrophe, and, you know, no spaces.
Great. Wow. So,
what we're doing there is we're trying to, you know, and as I said, we kind of created this before all this happened, but we're trying to set up a medical fund for Nalene for 2015. And so that, you know, I mean, we're kind of running, you know, we're kind of the gas is nearly empty with us. And so we're trying to create sort of a something to carry us through next year. So that's what this is for.
And that is minus all these things that come up, like the unpredictability of these diseases and what's come up now in the past few months.
Yeah.
I mean, what we calculated was kind of an average, you know,
an average base.
And then, I mean, something like this that's going on, obviously we did not include $30,000 medicine.
Wow.
But, you know, it would be, anything would be a huge help.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I just, I wanted to record something because, I wanted you guys to be able to tell your story, because it seems like, you're trying to use social media, and, I've got this podcast, and it's like, well, we might as well just see if we can get the word out there and just talk about what's going on with you guys. So, and I don't want to keep Nalene longer than an hour, because I know that you're tired and, you've got a lot going on, but I just, want to thank you guys for coming on and just being so honest and, talking about everything that's been happening. And I want to beg people out there to please donate to this fund, crowdrise.com/ Nalene and Cleo's medical bills. I mean, and it's also, again, on parttimefanboy.com. There's a giant link which will take you straight to the medical fund. Please donate as much as you can. I mean, is there anything else that you guys... And, what's the hashtag, Corey? We need to swamp Blue Shield California. What is that at Twitter?
At Blue Shield CA.
At Blue Shield CA. So we need to tell them to approve Nalene Blake's medication, because at this point, this is ridiculous. In the 21st century, with Obamacare around the corner, which, however you feel about it, there's obviously people out there who want, people to get the care that they deserve, and Nalene deserves all the care that she can get. Is there anything else that you guys want to say before we sign off?
If I can get this out without choking up, thank you, Christian, so much for this opportunity. It's been a big goal, and if you can say dream of mine, to raise awareness. I know that I am, and we as a family are not the only ones who go through this and are going through this. And I have the wonderful, amazing privilege, honor of knowing so many people who are willing to help, like you, Christian, and others. And it just means so much to me. But one of my biggest things is I'm really big about raising awareness. And apparently this is the time. So, because I'm talking to a few other outlets too. So, we'll see what happens with that. But thank you. And to anybody out there who's listening, I would be happy to talk to you and connect if you would like to.
Sure. And where should they email you or connect with you? Just Nalene.com? Can they contact you through that site? Or?
Yep, they can go to Nalene.com. They can follow me there. I'm going to try to start writing again. It's a little bit difficult, but well, after hearing this, they'll know.
Yeah. And there's also the part-time fanboy email, which is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. You know, you can send it directly to me and I'll forward it to Nalene and, you know, she'll get any messages. So, I want you to be okay. You guys have been such good friends throughout the years. Like I said on Facebook the other day, I wish I was a billionaire so I could just throw money at both of you, you know, and just, you know, pull you under my wing and just take care of you because you've always been so sweet and nice. And honestly, people out there, you don't know how wonderful like Nalene and Corey am. I mean, I'm a grump. I have a temper. I get ornery and I like to debate people and get angry. Like Corey and Nalene are not like that. They're just like the sweetest, nicest people you've ever met. And for them to be going through this, it's not fair. So, and I guess that's pretty much it. Corey, is there anything you want to say?
No, just thank you, Christian.
Well, anytime. And this has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. Please, please, please donate to Nalene's medical fund. It will help them more than you can imagine. Any amount helps. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.